Hello, this is Bill Beekman, Michigan State University Vice President and Director of Athletics, with this edition of MSU Today. And today I'm very excited to have the opportunity to welcome Barb Kranz, who's the Director of Facilities Planning and Space Management at Michigan State, and a person who many people at the outside the university may not be familiar with, but I can assure you that everybody inside the university knows Barb's name because she's the point person on all issues related to space. And space is a very critical issue at a university. And so, Barb, could you just tell us a little bit about the role that that facilities planning and space management plays at the university, what that office does and what you do?
So overall, facilities planning and space management, we report jointly to the provost and the VP for administration, and certainly work close with the president and others in accomplishing our work. We have 18 colleges on campus and many support units and departments within that. And people need places to work. We need to make sure we have classrooms for our students and other instructional spaces. Again, we collaborate with RHS, Residential Hospitality Services, and athletics. We look for ways to coordinate and leverage our space resources. And not only that, but financial and human resources. Again, as we bring people together facility resources. We have policies and protocols, procedures that we develop to help ensure our space resources are used as best as they can be. We work on barrier-free planning for the institution, and MSU has a long history of that, and I can talk a bit about that later. Teaching and learning spaces, I mentioned classrooms, and it's broader than that. We have work that our students need to do, whether that's in a research lab, we need to make sure we can accommodate that. And we facilitate the whole capital planning process for the institution. And again, we work closely with our partners, our colleges, our infrastructure planning and facilities group as well.
Well, Barb, one of the things that I've always found really interesting about the work you do is that it's everything is collaborative. That it's, you know, when you're the person responsible for all the facilities, you know, oftentimes there's very little space that's unoccupied. So much of the space, somebody's in it. So if you're trying to find space for a new researcher who's coming to campus or a new faculty member, yeah, you know, there's oftentimes a lot of sort of dominoes that have to fall into place, and maybe moving a person to make space available for another person, or accommodating another research project or what have you. And and you were a person that I worked with very early in my career. We had a health colleges group that included the College of Human Medicine when I was the assistant dean there. Along with the colleges of osteopathic medicine and nursing, and the health team, and veterinary medicine as well, and I've always thought that that group was one of the best committees I ever worked on. And sometimes people at the university would scratch their heads and say, "Really around space, because it's such a controversial issue," but it can be very, very challenging. But that was just such a good group of people that trusted each other, and I think really represented what's in some ways best about the university in terms of collaboration and crossing boundaries from colleges and working one college working to support another and that kind of thing. Does that kind of thing still go on? And how do you work through solving problems and space-related issues?
You mentioned the committee, and that was it's still in place. And matter of fact, it has been so successful that over the years, we now have five or six of these committees that I believe serve our campus very well. It has made my job easier, frankly, while it's all... We don't always agree to everything, but as you mentioned, people build trust with these teams. I believe they support our programming well. And again, like I said, that one is still in place. And we have a range of them, from one that's set up for our most recent research building that opened, the Interdisciplinary Science and Technology Building. We have one for Molecular Plant Sciences. And again, these are typically the associate deans from the colleges participate. And my office, and then if we need to bring in others, we can do that. But we build an understanding around the needs, not just for a particular college or department, but across the institution. And I would say it's mirrored as we look at how, on the research side, for instance, where grants are now typically submitted with teams of people. And so if we follow that, it became very important as the colleges and the provost and VP research and others, that collaboration and interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary work of our faculty and staff and supporting students, that actually then manifested itself in our space. And so, again, these committees have been key to that. We've even have a campus-wide research committee that is looking all across programs and the research priorities, and then connecting that back to our planning for space going forward.
We have so many different kinds of space on campus, and we have a lot of space that that's coming online. We have the STEM building is one obvious example, which is the building that really wraps around the former power plant that sits at the, I guess it's the southeast corner of the stadium, to provide some perspective on where it is. But we're also very recently completed a building that sits in, well, what used to be the parking lot of the clinical center, an additional research building. And so what will go in those buildings? And presumably research in the research building, but are there particular departments or colleges that'll be focused on? And then walk us through a little bit of this really fascinating STEM building. It's fascinating both in terms of its design, its construction, but also its utilization and how we think it'll be used by our faculty and students.
So a few minutes on the research side. So the reference to by the clinical center. So what we've over a period of, I'd say, about 10 years or so, as part of the commitment to growing our research portfolio, the development and focus on biomedical research is really what's the overarching theme, if you will, in that neighborhood by the clinical center. So the bioengineering building that opened about 3-4 years ago, it supports the Institute for Quantitative Health Science and Engineering. But that institute has mainly faculty coming from human medicine, engineering, and the College of Natural Science. And so that its home is in bioengineering, but it reaches out to faculty and other colleges outside of its walls, if you will. The new Interdisciplinary Science and Technology Building that opened in fall of 19, it has faculty from colleges in human med, NatSci, vet med, osteopathic medicine, and the College of Social Science. And again, there was the programs within that precision health, there's a computational area, reproductive and developmental sciences, and then neuroscience, both behavioral and physiology. So you can start to see, in terms of the collaborative nature, there's a lot of work on the front end while as part of the building planning, focused around who will go there and how we take these various pieces and bring them together to create something greater and to use the space as a tool, if you will, to support the programs.
Well, and Barb, before you talk about the STEM building, let's stay on research for a second, because I think one of the fascinating developments that's occurred over the years at least from my perspective, is when I started my career at Michigan State, most of our researchers had designated lab space that they owned. It was their room, essentially. And there was a door on it to a hallway, and when they left for the night, they locked the door, and that was their lab or their set of labs. And the thinking around laboratory research has really evolved such that our laboratory space in Grand Rapids and much of the space we've built here on campus in East Lansing is really far more open. So the laboratory benches that one faculty member has are in a huge room adjacent to laboratory benches that the other faculty have, such that there are greater opportunities for synergy, collaboration, sharing of ideas, sharing of equipment, all those kinds of things. Could you talk about that evolution a little bit and how that's impacted your work?
Yeah, so that is correct. In the first building actually that we did on campus, in that model where, as you described, it's an open lab. Multiple faculty are placed in there. It's at the Molecular Plant Science Edition, so focused on plant science research. On one level, the ability to, if someone's space need grows or is actually compress, we would anticipate that the cost to do that and the time frame to make that change in terms of an infrastructure would be minimized. We do spend more time on the front end, again, working with our faculty, our departments, and colleges on the space policies, if you will, or criteria of how we place people. And again, thoughtfulness around their work, looking at their team sizes even more closely, and then continuing to meet with the representatives from the units on a going forward, that we don't move people in and then walk away. So these committees that are in place that we spoke about earlier are really key to that. They provide a voice, I would say, for not only at the dean's level, but to allow the conversations to go to the department chairs and the faculty and back and forth. And to leverage sharing of equipment, we have discussions about that, to look at and talking with the faculty and so forth about what can we share. So maybe we don't have to buy three of a very expensive microscope, for example. And we've also, just one last comment in terms of how things have evolved. In these newer buildings with the open spaces, we actually don't assign them in the traditional way that you would have seen, 10, 15 years ago. The faculty member is allocated space and they have it for whatever period of time, and where there's a commitment, we're not going to, just move someone out at a short notice. That's all very thoughtfully managed and carefully managed.
It's fascinating to me that how we think about space has really evolved in a manner that's consistent with, or, I don't know which is the cart and which is the horse, but in the way that we think about research has evolved, and how we think about how we conduct research and research infrastructure and how all those things have evolved over the years. And so, back when I started in the College of Human Medicine, you had R01s that were very grants that were very independent, and they were really based on individuals. And more as research has evolved, the grant funding agencies have looked more at collaborative opportunities and opportunities for people to work together, and that's allowed us to think about how we structure ourselves and create more collaborative opportunities. And as you say, it's not just things like talking over the bench between people, but it's also being able to share equipment, sometimes to share staff, but probably most importantly to share ideas. And then as people work collaboratively, sometimes with people very, very in very different fields than themselves, then ideas germinate and grow, and we get new and exciting research opportunities. But it's interesting to see how that philosophical sort of shift over the years at the National Institutes of Health and National Science Foundation and other major funding agencies has turned into a shift in how we think about space and facilities and how we buy equipment and how we house people. And it all sort of evolves in an interesting way together. So that's, to me, that's really, really cool. So tell us about the STEM building and this sort of new, huge, interesting structure that's popped up on both sides of the old power plant. And people may not know that that was the university's main power plant before the Simon power plant on Service Road was built. And you know, a few years ago we took down the now it's probably a decade or more ago, we took down the smokestack that had the MSC there that you could see from the stadium because it had become unsafe, and so we had to have that removed. But then the building sat largely empty, and there were big pieces of power plant machinery inside of it and such. But it sat empty for many, many years until the notion came about that it'd be the perfect location for a really exciting, interesting academic building. And it's a great location insofar as it sits so centrally in our campus. So tell us about what's happening there.
I start always saying there are so many stories around the STEM teaching and learning facility. So I'll try to touch on a couple of them. And as you said, the former power plant, it has been empty for many, many years. There had been over a period of time interest, and then things would be looked at and then it would go away. But then this idea of the STEM facility, and I'd say a convergence of things. The campus, we have a number of faculty have been involved, still are involved in research, some funded by the NSF, National Science Foundation, around improving student learning, student outcomes in the STEM disciplines. So that had been going, still is continuing to go going forward. And as we continue to make investments in teaching and learning facilities, we were understanding when you put those things together around what's the best way for student teaching and learning, there were things we simply could not accomplish even with renovations of existing facilities. And so the notion, and then also both locally and in state and federal level in terms of an acknowledgement and support and efforts being made to have more students in the STEM disciplines, to persist in those disciplines. So all these things converged, and again, around program and supporting our students. And that resulted in moving forward and bringing forward a development of a facility to support that. So in terms of the back in this collaborative notion that we've talked about around the research side, as we began the planning, we spent, I would say, a year or more engaged with colleges, natural science, engineering is involved, and College of Arts and Letters. Those are the three primary. Lyman Briggs also participated as well, where we had two of our former dean and associate dean working with faculty to understand what it would take and what would a curriculum and instruction and spaces look like in a new building. And then that moved forward into bringing together, again, colleges and departments that have the gateway courses in chemistry, computer science, material science, and physics, and those in particular, and working with architectural and engineering consultants. We even brought in a design thinking firm to have a different lens by which we would do some of our planning and to create some, look at creating experiences within the facility. So as that moved forward, and we also submitted the project as our capital outlay request to the state of Michigan. And we were successful to having support from the state of Michigan, which the state is contributing $30 million to the project. As we launched into the actual planning and the site location, it was initially conceived to be a standalone adjacent to the power plant and did not have the power plant as part of the project. And thinking that further downstream, we might be able to incorporate that. And as the planning progressed, the idea was floated about actually incorporating that into the project. And there was support for doing that. And so we have this convergence of the old and the new. And I think, again, people will, when the building is done, I think there will be something great there, both in terms of the program and the facility. And then talking about that further, the new structure, which is on both anchoring on both the north and south side of the power plant, is using mass timber construction. And that in and of itself has generated significant interest. Our Department of Forestry and the College of Ag and Natural Resources is actually quite involved with that and working with their industry partners. They're looking at some research and teaching opportunities. There's potential, I believe, some economic development potentially with the timber industry in the state.
And is this the first building that we've constructed that way?
That is correct.
Just to drive by, it's very interesting to see all the timber framing.
Just to touch base a little bit on that, the timber, the level of precision, and I can't give you the number, but the tolerances are extremely small. It's manufactured off-site, brought here to campus on-site, and then assembled. That's actually led to some of our construction partners where they have been able to assemble some of the ductwork off-site and bring larger pieces and then install it. So there's things people are learning, they're adjusting their construction methods. And we've had a lot of interest from external companies, contractors, design firms. Actually coming to the site to look at the facility. So I think that will continue, and I would anticipate and would hope that we have lots of interest, both on the program and the delivery curriculum changes that will be put in place when we bring the building online, as well as all the construction components.
So that's a building that's probably going to be done in the next 6 months or thereabouts, but what are there other things in the hopper? Maybe where we haven't put the shovel in the ground yet. Things that you can tell us about coming attractions on campus.
So the one I would like to note is that the President Stanley and the Board of Trustees, are very supportive, and we are engaging in a feasibility study for a multicultural center for the campus. It's in its early stages, but we will be undertaking a feasibility study. So there is a website that if individuals are interested to learn more about the development of the project, it's MC for Multicultural Center. .msu.edu. And there's a lot of information, and that's an active site. So that, like I said, it's in a feasibility phase right now. We're just launching that. A lot of student engagement, and anticipate that the consultants along with the planning group will engage the community in further discussion and planning.
Well, and that's one of the things, Barb, you mentioned the sort of the feasibility and planning. I think that that people may not appreciate, and it certainly was was fascinating to me. Maybe somebody that has built their own home kind of gets the flavor of it. But I remember back when we were, I remember back when we were working on a project in the College of Human Medicine, and we were going to build out a very big open space in what was essentially the basement of the radiology building as student study space. And the when you think about the project, again, it was an already constructed building. We were just sort of building out a space within it, and probably probably half of the time of the project or more was really in the planning and talking to the various constituency groups and learning what the students needed and how they wanted to study and what spaces would accommodate them, how the faculty would use the space to help teach students, even how our facilities planning folks or our IPF team would clean the facility, and then issues of security and access and all those kinds of things that you have to talk about and understand and collaborate on before the first actual construction person comes in and starts building a wall or removing a wall or what have you. And so that's obviously a huge piece of every project and something that you're involved in sometimes for years before a shovel even hits the ground.
So Bill, thank you for kind of going back around to that. We'll often talk about, to your point, sometimes these projects, so I've been on campus almost 35 years, and there have been some projects that have, I'll say projects, have been in discussion on and off for, it could be 10, 15 years, and the need still is there, and maybe the project or its purpose or need changes over time. But to some of your comments, it is a lot. We spend a lot of time in my group listening, asking lots of questions, really trying to understand the purpose and what they're trying to accomplish, and that when the project, if you will, the actual, whether it's a renovation, a construction, a reassignment of a couple spaces to support something, that when that is done, that we have met the, what I'll again refer to as the program intent, that they can deliver, whether that's instruction, whether it's student meeting space, the research, that we have done a good job of, again, fleshing out what it is that is important and why they need whatever that facility or space might be. And that as that moves forward, that we've identified and gathered up and conveyed to the architectural and engineering people that have to translate that and put that on paper so that it can be built, whether that's, again, a new construction or a renovation. And as you say, at the end, that the card access is right, that the spaces can be cleaned and maintained. There's also one thing I didn't mention that people probably don't know. My office does keep track of every room on campus in terms of, is it an office? And if it is an office, who's sitting in that office? So, that's important to planning. And
And Barb, you raise an interesting question. So an interesting point that takes me to the first of the two last questions I want to ask you. And these are sort of more fun questions, but we talk about office space versus academic space. And it caused me to think that there are just so many very, very different spaces on our campus. We have various levels of research laboratories, but we also have swimming pools. We have four swimming pools on our campus. We have athletic spaces, we have many kitchens to provide food service, all just a sort of an almost unlimited sort of functionality. over at the police department, we have a holding cell. So we I don't know that I'd call it a full functioning jail, but we have space to hold somebody and detain someone if we have to. All those different kinds of functionalities that we have. What is the what's the most interesting space you've come across?
Oh, the most interesting.
or weird, yeah. or something that maybe people wouldn't think exists on our campus.
Well, before I answer that, if I may, I would, if I can take that a little bit different, I'll come back to that. The working at a place like Michigan State is, because of its breadth of, to your comment, of the whole range of things that we support and the people that we get to interact in, I find makes, it's one of the reasons I believe I've been in my role as long as I have. It's fascinating. And actually, when you ask about, it's, I would say the, some of the research that we do and the types of spaces that we have to support that might surprise people. And I think of Geltner Hall, for example, just because, and people might say, well, goodness sakes, for those of us familiar with Geltner Hall, the breadth of research that goes on there with, but we have scorpions there and we have, so we have specialized to do work with mosquitoes and work with all sorts of.
If I recall, we have eel tanks over there, don't we?
We probably have eels. We have octopus now at bioengineering. So the spaces might not be look odd. We have all sorts of fish tanks for all sorts of cold water fish, freshwater fish, warm water fish. So more of the range that, again, from the breadth of the campus and from a space planning perspective, it offers challenges but opportunities, and just to know the range of work that our people do on campus.
It is truly amazing the depth and breadth of research that we do on campus. You know, and issues that surprised me when you're building a research building that needs very strict tolerances relative to vibration, for example, and we have to worry about construction because we've got railroad tracks on our campus, and what vibration effect might those tracks have on research projects that we want to conduct in that building, and you know, things like that I just would have never dreamed of before becoming engaged in this process. So let me ask you one last question, and that is of all the, well, and I'll answer it myself first, but of all the favorite spaces, of all the places on campus that we have, I'm curious what your favorite space is. And in my favorite space, of course, I thought of this question, so I had some time to reflect on it, and I'm putting you on the spot, but my favorite space I thought about was the library. And whether I was in high school or as an undergraduate student or later doing research involving my work at the university, I've always enjoyed hanging out at the library and just sort of wandering around, looking in the stacks, the sort of just imagining the amount of knowledge and wisdom that's in that single building in all of those books and computer materials and other things has always sort of been astounding to me. And so it's always been one of my most favorite places on campus. But as a person who's probably one of the very few people that's been in every building on our campus and probably darn near every room on our campus, what's your most favorite space?
Well, I'd have to say there are a couple, and they're both actually lobbies. At the auditorium building, both on the main auditorium side and on the Fairchild Theater side.
Those are beautiful spaces, yeah.
I believe they're beautiful spaces. So if people have not seen them, when our campuses, when we're able to move around more freely here, would encourage folks to take a look at them. The North Kedzie Lobby is also, I find that very beautiful as well. So I would say those are three of my favorite spots of all of our spaces on campus.
The first time my kids walked into the North Kedzie lobby, they said, well, this feels like Hogwarts. it's got this sort of very gothic castle-like feel to it that really is cool. It's a pretty neat space. Well, Barb, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us today. I've always really enjoyed working with you. You have one of the more challenging jobs on campus and one of those jobs where if everything goes right, sort of nobody knows who you are. And yet you're the glue that holds so much of what we do together, because it's not possible for research to occur without a research lab. It's not possible for teachers to teach and students to learn without classrooms that have comfortable chairs and sight lines that work and all of those myriad details that people can't even imagine that you spend the day and night worrying about. And so you're one of the great citizens of our university and a person I'm very happy to call a good friend. So thank you so much for joining us today, and we really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Bill. And I've appreciated working with you over all these years as well. And thank you for your kind words.